What's happening, Ritzy?
What's going on? It's St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yay.
Happy day.
Do you like the green I'm wearing?
Yeah. Apparently you're not Irish.
Apparently.
You look Irish.
I forgot. So, we are in Building 42 today. Say hello to our guest.
Hello, everyone.
I'm not even going to attempt to say your name. You say it for us.
Sure. My name's Mylon Thompson Bukovic.
All right.
Ooh, I love it.
That's a great name.
And what team are you on?
I'm on the Internet Information Services team, IIS.
And what do you do?
I'm a group program manager for the team. So the area that I own is IIS as well as the Windows Server hosting system.
Hmm. Okay, so break that down for us dummies.
Sure.
What does that really mean? What do you do as a group program manager on the IIS team?
So I have a team of program managers, and on the IIS side, what we do is we define the features of the core web server, as well as the management tools and interfaces, administration interfaces that people use to manage the core web server. We also own the media serving charter, which means that Windows Media Services, as well as all the new plans that we have for taking media server and integrating it into the core web server. So that's one sort of piece of the web server area. And then the other one is the Windows Server-based hosting system, which is really a collection of tools and best practices that we provide to web hosters like the GoDaddies of the world to go and host the Windows Server stack in their data centers so that people can come and they can build their own hosted websites using ASP.NET and other Microsoft technologies running on Windows Server and SQL Server and other other Microsoft products. So that's sort of a broader base, and we have a small team that works there to really make sure that we can provide the right tools for the web hosters of the world.
Wow,
cool.
Cool, you're responsible for a lot, it sounds like.
No, yeah. It just sounds like that.
That's good.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been at Microsoft?
I've been at Microsoft for about 9 years now.
Always in this part of the world, or?
No, not so much. I've bounced around a little bit. I worked, my first job at Microsoft, I don't know if anyone remembers this, but I worked on Microsoft Transaction Server.
Sure.
Yes.
That? It's a great product, fabulous team. It was a great experience. It was my first PM job, and I couldn't have learned more in a better, more talented team than that. That was a truly unique time. So Microsoft Transaction Server 1.5 and 2.0, which shipped in the Windows NT option pack, a little blast from the past there. I went and worked in startups for a little bit, and when I came back, I worked in the Office division, and I worked on the Visio product. So I actually think in diagrams now. It's a fabulous product too, Visio. So, and then I worked, I went over to Windows Server, and I worked on a mid-market business server. It's codenamed Centro. Helped with that effort, and then I've been over here on the IIS product for about a year now, so I'm a relatively new member of the IIS team.
So did you say that you left Microsoft?
I did. I went to go work in startups for a few years.
Tell us about that experience.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. My husband and I actually met at Microsoft, and we both left to go and work at a startup called QPass that was started up by some folks that we knew out of Microsoft, and it was down in Pioneer Square. It was a ton of fun. We lived and still live in Seattle, in the Central District of Seattle, so we really liked having that, you know, two-minute commute down the hill, going to Pioneer Square, and we had that, you know, we were the first, in the first, I think, 15 people hired by the startup, and we were there until it, you know, went up to 250. It was a great experience. We, you know, it was a great way to learn so many different jobs at one time. Had a lot of fun. And then I worked for another startup called Digio Broadband, which is a Paul Allen startup. That is, both of these startups are still around today. QPass got acquired, but Digio Broadband is still there.
Nice. It helps having Paul Allen as your, you know, producer, as you will.
It does.
That's good. Cool.
So what's your background? Are you a developer, a technical person?
You know, most of my stuff I've learned on the job. I actually have a liberal arts degree, University of California. And then after that, I went into the Peace Corps. I went to Africa. Went to Mali, West Africa. Went to a town called Djené, which is up in the northern part of Mali. And it has the fame of having the largest mud structure in the world. It's a mud mosque. And it's amazing, and the people in the village are just fabulous, and it was a great experience. So I went there after college, and when I came back, I went into the software space, primarily because I just love to solve problems. And that's where I started, and it's pretty much where I am now. I'm still sort of doing a lot of the same problem-solving things, but on a different scale and across a different set of technologies. But yeah, no, I didn't start with any technical background, but I went back to school and went back to University of Washington, plowed through some computer science classes there, got a little bit more background, and then just did a lot of learning on the job.
Wow. But you're probably surrounded by a lot of developers and engineering types, right, who are hardcore technical.
Absolutely.
So what's it like working with them day in, day out, and having dependencies on each other?
You know, I love it. I mean, I actually love it. I mean, one of the things that I'm a huge fan of is this concept of the idea wallow, right? Which is, you know, I think that the quality of any idea expands once you broaden the conversation to other people who have different experiences and different core competencies than you do. So, you know, especially on the IS team, I've been on the team for a year, and I just, every day I'm just amazed at the depth of the members of this team. It's an elite team. I mean, there are some incredibly smart people with a lot of experience on this team, and I find that every time I go and I talk to one or more of those and I get people in a room, we start to wallow on some idea, we just all get smarter. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that we all have our core competencies, right, and we all have our unique value adds. And just by making sure that you have that cross-section in a conversation, I just think you can move faster and better than you could if you don't, if you just assume that, you know, a limited set of perspectives or your perspective is the right one.
What do you think are some of your strengths that you bring to the table with your diverse background?
Well, it's a good question. I'm a pretty curious person by nature. I like to ask a lot of questions, and I like to move fast too. So what I try to do, my unique value add that I sometimes bring to a discussion where I might not have the technical depth that other folks have, is to ask perhaps the what could be construed as the obvious questions, and it's to really ferret out the assumptions, right? I mean, I think the biggest killer of innovative ideas is the wrong assumption, and they're everywhere. They're pervasive in all kinds of thinking. You know, the most common one is, yeah, we already thought of that. Or didn't we do that 3 years ago? Or customers don't want that, right? I mean, you can think about all these things, and they just shoot in the head so many new and innovative and interesting ideas. And when you question your assumptions, you throw out your assumptions, you start from a level playing field, your rate of innovation goes up phenomenally. And if you can sort of keep things going and keep things out of analysis paralysis too, and you can combine those two things, that's something that I think I can help with. And again, you know, if you can complement that perspective with the people who do know the product at a super deep level and been working on it for 10 years and know the space, I think it's a good combination.
Absolutely.
So after 9+ years at the company and coming and going, what have you seen in terms of diversity and how that's changed over the years?
I think it's gotten very different. I mean, you know, if I just think about my different, you know, perspectives, when I started, I was a single woman, and I probably worked, I don't even want to know how much, I worked nonstop. My husband, who I met here, his name's Mark, he worked nonstop, too. He used to sleep under his desk, like, once a week, right? Wow. And then we left, and we worked in a startup where we continued to work crazy hours, and then we had kids, and then things changed a lot. We have 3 kids. We have a 6-year-old named Nikki, we have a 4-year-old Alex, and we have a 2-year-old Zach, and all boys.
Wow.
And our lifestyles change. My husband's staying home right now. He's looking after the boys, and he's also working on a science fiction novel.
Nice.
I'm really proud of him. He's a great writer. Ooh. So, you know, our lifestyles changed, and working, you know, 20 hours a week or 20 hours a day just doesn't quite work like it used to. So, what I've seen is the company has taken a phenomenal step forward in accommodating flex work schedules, right? Where I still work a lot, and I still get a lot done, but I work on a different timeline than I did before. So I come in early, and I leave at 4 o'clock every day, like clockwork, because it's for me, it's super important to be home by 5 to cook dinner for my family. My kids go to bed at 7, right?
Right.
If I come home at 7, I never see my boys.
Exactly.
So I'm home by 5. Well, you got to sort of play the traffic game, right?
Of course.
It takes a while.
I hear you on that.
So I'm back in Seattle by 5, and I'm cooking dinner for the boys, and I'm spending time with my family. And then the nights that I don't have date night, which is very important. Right? Nights I don't have date night are the nights I get back on my computer and I just work. So, you know, for me, the ability to have that kind of a schedule is something that I appreciate tremendously. The fact that it doesn't let, it doesn't get in the way of my career progression as well. There's enough people at Microsoft who really care about results that they don't look at the times that you're in the office. They just care about what your output is.
Exactly.
And the fact that I can do this as a manager is, it's a pretty phenomenal thing. I don't think that might have been as possible 10 years ago.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because Microsoft has gotten older as a company? Our execs, our founders, have had families themselves. What do you think has changed or prompted the change?
Well, 10 years ago, I gotta tell you, zero exec exposure. Nothing, because I was really at the bottom of the totem pole, right? I'm an entry-level program manager, didn't really know anybody except for my manager, who was great and took care of me. But so I can't really answer if the execs have changed. I do know that in the division that I'm in, which is the server tools business, I know for a fact that Bob Muglia cares. I know for a fact, because he sets a time aside time for his family. He has explicitly supported flexible work arrangements, so I know he cares, and I know he has cared for a long time, and that sets the culture of this division, which is one of the reasons why I really like to stay in this division, because I know that from the top down, there are managers who believe. Because it's one thing to say you believe, and it's another thing to really believe.
Sure.
So I can't really say what it was like 10 years ago. I didn't really have the lifestyle 10 years ago, so I can't say that I wouldn't be able to do it, but I just look at, you know, the fact that a lot of people I work with now do have young kids, right? That the general age seems to be a little bit older than it was. I think that contributes to it, but from my perspective, the exec has a huge impact, huge impact on how it's addressed.
Certainly. Cool. You have some good ones in the story. You have Soma.
Soma's great.
Big teddy bear.
I'll tell him you said that.
Yeah, well, Soma's a good friend of ours, but I mean, in a great way. I mean, he's one of the nicest execs I've met. I don't know, but anyway.
So I also want to talk about more in depth about you coming and going and leaving the company.
Sure.
I mean, did you always feel like there would be a home here for you again? Was Microsoft pretty open to that? Is that, I mean, I think that's interesting for our viewers to hear, like, how Microsoft encourages people to go and expand, you know, enrich themselves and their lives and their experiences and then come back into the fold.
Yeah. So, I can't say I was encouraged to leave, you know. I can't say I was encouraged to leave. But I think when I did leave, my manager at the time, whose name is Robert Barnes, he was, I think he understood. I mean, I think he understood that I'd been working for a few years at Microsoft, and I was just eager to experience different things, right? I was eager to get part of the .NET boom, or the .com boom. I was really just wanting to have happy hour downtown. I'm so shallow.
That's fine.
I'm so shallow.
You're human.
I was in my 20s.
In the burbs, for sure.
So, yes, Red Robin downtown. Hard for me. So, so I was. So I think he understood all that. I was pretty young, and you know, I think he was sorry to see me go, but I think he understood why I left. I think the main reason why I came back is that I really missed the sheer uniform quality of people at Microsoft. Because when you work for a startup, you have your stars in a startup, and then you have your people who are there, but maybe aren't pulling as much weight as the stars. And I think that. It was important for me to go back into a place that once I got my diversity of experiences where I could be a little bit of a product manager, a little bit of a developer, a little bit of a tester, a little bit of a program manager in the startup environment, I thought, you know, it's important for me to come back to Microsoft and really start, you know, really fine-tuning my skills in the area that I think is my core competency, which is program management. And Microsoft does a phenomenal job of training, too. When you're in a startup, nobody's looking after your career. You're working, man. You're working for the bottom line. You're working for the potential shareholders of your company, right? And when you're at Microsoft, I actually think people care about your development a lot more at Microsoft. I think that, you know, I take a lot of training classes. I encourage my team to take training classes. We talk about career formally twice a year, but we talk every month about career development of the individual people on my team. I mean, we actually focus on this, and I think that's one of the benefits of the larger companies, especially the companies like Microsoft, who sat up and realized, wow, a huge amount of our investment and our potential is really people.
Sure.
It's not code bases, it's people. And I think that has been a big change and something that I came back to Microsoft for, specifically for.
That's cool. But I think one of the interesting challenges are is your manager isn't really involved with your career in the sense that you have to know, mm-hmm. you have to have some sense of trajectory in mind before you come to these conversations, right?
You do.
And some people might not be career-minded people, but could be stars,
right?
Like outrageous individual contributors who like to solve hard technical problems. But mm-hmm. from a career perspective, you know, I don't want to be a manager.
Right.
I don't want to, you know, have to jump through all these hoops to go become an executive. Yeah. So what do you tell people like that on your team who you might see who are seriously hardcore individual contributors, but they want to grow their career, which really, let's be honest, means make more money, mm-hmm. get more stock, mm-hmm. be more senior.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that, since you used the C word. Career.
You know, we have a higher proportion of those folks here on IIS than I've seen on any other team that I've been on or mm-hmm. managed. And the reason for that is because IIS is the web platform for Microsoft. All web applications are built on IIS. The platform itself is incredibly broad and it's incredibly deep. As a result, we have some people who are very, very deeply technical on this team who really don't want to be managers. They don't, right? They want to keep on being very deep subject matter experts on their team and driving, you know, the innovation of the technical platform forward. And in fact, if we don't have a good percentage of those people on our team, our product and its quality suffers. So the key thing there, and I try to focus more on experiences, is, you know, what kind of experiences are you going through now that help impact your impact really on the product. So I will have, you know, a couple people on my team at any given point who have an incredibly broad impact on the team, but they're not managers. They're architects, right? They're PM architect types. And that's a path that we grow a decent percentage of my team along, and it's because we have such a deep and technical platform that we're building. I always have a percentage of folks who are very interested in people management as well.
Sure.
It's not a requirement though for success.
Cool.
For me, you know, I'm lucky to have a great manager who watches my back, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, to have a manager who watches your back. I think any career has to be driven by the employee. But, man, it helps to have a manager who's looking out for you. I mean, my manager's come to me and said, hey, you know, I heard about this training, you know, it's not in this particular catalog, but it's in this area that you might not see as much. I think it'd be really good for you. Why don't you go take it? Why don't you go talk to so-and-so? They're going to have good impact on you. All stuff that, you know, I don't have exposure to, information I don't have exposure to, but he does. And, you know, this is Bill Staples, my boss. He just goes and he thinks about me. He's got me in the back of his head all the time for things like that. I try to take that model and pass it along to my team, which is, you know, all the meetings that I'm in that they're not in, I can help think about what could help them in their career, whether it's just information or opportunities to help them develop.
Excellent.
What was the name of that program that you mentioned that you wanted to talk about?
Windows
Innovative Services or something?
It's not necessarily a program.
Okay.
It's actually a topic that's pretty high in our minds right now, which is basically, how do you take a mature platform, like the web platform that we have at Microsoft, and how do you innovate on top of it? The platform's been around, server's been around for a while, it does a lot of pretty core, you know, it's got some pretty core features that enable web applications all over the world to work. How do you take that forward? And it's something we're looking at right now because our IIS 7 feature set was huge. And in fact, if you look at a lot of the press that we're getting around IIS 7 today, it's being adopted at a much higher rate by early adopters than our previous version was. So if you look at what we did for IIS 6, we put a huge amount of effort into stability and performance. We got a rock solid server, and then IIS 7 we built on that, and we added a lot of innovative features. So we rebuilt our config system to be XML based. We have a brand new administration tool that's built on a web form. We have all these new features. So, you know, the question that we look around our team now is, we go, where do we go? What are we doing next, right? And how do we build something for Web 2.0? This is the interesting part, right? Mm-hmm. So when your customers are the web applications and the startups of the world, how do you build a platform that's agile and innovative enough that you're not just keeping up with them, you're enabling the next generation of scenarios? And that's a topic I kind of wanted to, you know, talk a little bit about today, A, because this is something we think about a lot on the IIS team, and B, because I think it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, I mean, let's talk about that. I mean, a web server's primary function is mm-hmm. to generate web pages, mm-hmm. if you will, either with ASP.NET on the server or mm-hmm. C++. You can still do ASAPI and IIS mm-hmm. 7, although that's
right.
unfortunate. I mean, from, you know, memory leak standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And you have PHP. We
PHP
now host
support.
PHP applications as well.
Okay, so what are some other things that... So that's a great segue into mm-hmm. the question, right? Mm-hmm. The Web 2.0 is much more than Microsoft technology. So mm-hmm. supporting server-side constructs like PHP, mm-hmm. we don't author, mm-hmm. is interesting
yeah.
that we do that.
Yeah, it's actually a major initiative around open platform.
Mm.
So... the open platform, the open web server platform is a strategic direction for Microsoft. So we now host PHP on Windows Server reliably and with good performance, which, you know, we could host PHP applications before, but we didn't have those two pretty important components of having it be reliable and fast. So, but that's just sort of the start for us. I mean, we really are looking to have our application hosting story be very open, where we work really well and we can light up with ASP.NET, but really you can run any application hosting framework on Windows Server. So what that means for us, if you think about it from a customer perspective, is that you have a data center, and right now you got to run, you know, Windows and non-Windows in a single data center. You got to have different tools to run each one, you have to have different expertise in each mm-hmm. one. And what we're looking to do is we're really trying to consolidate that into one Windows Server platform, so you can run PHP, you can run ASP.NET, you can run Ruby on Rails, all on a single web server. Mm-hmm. So going down that path is, we think about that quite a bit. We think about that from a media perspective. You know, how can we change and have progressive download and streaming media be a first-class content type on IIS. So just like
great.
That's where it's going. If you look at the market today and you look at what people are doing with websites, they're not putting up words,
no.
right? A lot of stuff going up now is media. What are we doing now,
exactly.
right? So, you know, how can we help provide the best platform, open platform based on HTTP to deliver that kind of content?
Absolutely. And it would be interesting, what role will you play in the software plus services world, mm-hmm. right? Because what's happening is that web servers are going to be communicating with other web servers more than clients are communicating with a web server,
mm-hmm.
one could argue.
Mm-hmm.
If we have this net of interdependence where data is being exchanged in the cloud everywhere.
Right.
So kind of interesting to figure out what, from a feature perspective, from a developer feature perspective anyway, IIS could provide. I mean, you have a great modular architecture now, but
mm-hmm.
so, which does bring up the question, so in IIS 7 today, a developer can write a complete custom module, plop it on.
Yep. Any point in the pipeline.
It all works.
Any point in the pipeline. Yeah, nice. I think when we talk to customers, the thing that they always take away after we go over the features in IIS 7, which is actually kind of fun when you're talking, because you sort of go on and on, and you're like, wait, there's this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you're done, you're like, we revamped the architecture, we revamped the management tools, we have a new configuration system,
mm-hmm.
right? It kind of goes on and on. And, you know, one of the main reasons we were able to do all of that is because we moved to this new architecture module that you
mm-hmm.
you mentioned, where we took the core web server, which in IIS 6 was a fairly monolithic thing. It was a web server, and you plugged in with one entry point, which is ISAPI.
Mm-hmm.
DLL, and then we ported all that core functionality to basically 40 different modules. And what we've done with that is that we've allowed people to scale down what modules they want to have on the server, so they can absolutely customize their server to just be a static image server, to host certain application hosting frameworks only, be dedicated to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives users a really customized way to implement just the core functionality that they want to use. But what it's done for us in the product team is that it's let us also go and build much more agile software. So let me give you an example. We shipped a brand new FTP server, right? So we have the FTP server in Windows Server 2008. We shipped a whole new FTP server, which was a couple years of a dedicated feature team working on it, on this new architecture as a pluggable module that you download from the web. It'll only install in Windows Server 2008. You just go to IIS.net, which is the place that we have all of our downloads, and you download the new FTP server, right? And then it integrates into the management console. It just, you know, it's loaded up in the process, and it's just part of your web server. You can take it off again if you want. You can go back to IIS.net. You can download WebDAV. You can download a bitrate throttling media module that lets you throttle downloads from your website. So what it's done is it's let us work in feature teams across our product unit, and we have these individual feature teams that go and build a module that can be released in, you know, a year, year and a half on the web without waiting for an OS release that can be just plugged into IIS 7. Again, it won't work with IIS 6 because it's all based on that new open architecture. Mm-hmm. Just plugged into IIS 7 and then expanded. So that's just us. I mean, other teams can go out, or other companies can go out and build their own extensibility modules, but we have the flexibility now of, you know, releasing outside of other formal product releases, like the operating system. We'll still pay attention to that, of course, but and just open up our scenarios based on what customers want. And that's what we have to do, right? If we can't do that, we can't really be the web server of choice for Web 2.0. We have to have that agility.
Great, because our competitors certainly do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, though, because the whole notion of you're really talking about composability, and that's definitely the future for all of our products. These big, giant product releases someday won't happen anymore, mm-hmm. right? Windows will just, if it's modularized enough, will just grow over time. And all of a sudden you'll have, you know, a new version of Windows that grew over time as opposed to this big, giant. Anyway, I think that's sort of the thinking. Maybe that's happening, but I don't know. But I like that thinking.
It's a nice teaser, though.
I like that thinking. And you guys, you know, Guthrie's team and these people over here in 42, I must say, are just innovating the hell out of stuff.
Oh, we believe. So. We believe. I mean, this entire modular approach and, you know, the fast downloads. I mean, every one of our releases, and I talked about how we release in a year, year and a half, every one of our releases goes through at least two betas. So we release a lot of these things on the web, free download. We get a ton of feedback from the community around it, mm-hmm. right? So we get feedback in forums. We get feedback from customers directly. And then we iterate. So anything that you see within a 12 to 18-month release cycle has already gotten at least two major beta milestones of feedback. We do it in the ASP.NET team as well. So, you know, it's I think there is a lot of emphasis in this organization around innovation and getting stuff out there too. I mean, just let's come up with a prototype. Let's come up with a hypothesis. Let's come up with, you know, a CTP. Let's get it out there. Let's get some customer feedback. Bring it back. Refine it. Release it again. And not, you know, wait for long periods of time to build something. Get customer feedback and reset.
Exactly.
Right.
Amazing.
On. Right.
Absolutely.
On. So we were joking at the beginning of the interview about these patents.
Yes.
But tell us about them.
Well, we were also joking about the fact that this is my escape mechanism, right? That these things are pretty darn heavy, and I can throw them out the window if need be and fly out after them if I had to get out of the building fast.
Nice.
I think the entire concept of intellectual property is really important. I try to keep it in people's mind when we work on the IIS team just because I think it keeps our radar sharp around what is unique versus what is just iterative and what's building a better mousetrap, right? You know, it goes back to a concept that I talk to my team a lot about, which is offense and defense. And Microsoft can get really bogged down if we get into a defensive crouch and we're just constantly playing on feature parity and feature catch-up. I think there's this concept that you got to have parity to play, right? So this is like, you know, the cost of entry is another phrase for it. But you have to have enough parity with your key competitors, especially if you've got great competitors in the web space like we do. You have to have parity to play, but you also have to look at Microsoft's strengths. And that's where you play offense. And I think that Microsoft, when we play offense, we start to go into a new territory and a new way of thinking that I think is the way that we have to pursue very strongly to keep an edge in the market today. So when we do our planning and, you know, what you see, I mean, I look at those blocks as offense, essentially. It's, you know, how did we play offense in different areas, because that's where we're really going to pull ahead in areas that we can create space between us and the competition. And if we don't create that space, we're always playing catch-up in different areas. So that's how I look at the patents. That's offense, right there.
Cool.
Cool. I like that the bottle is spick and span right in front of them.
Yeah, keep them clean.
Yeah, I think this is the difference between the woman's office and the guy's office.
Interesting.
Because, you know, I go around and I'm like, you know, oh, there's a little spot over here, and I clean it up.
Huh. I also like on the cork board over here, there's all these things from her kids to mommy, and then right in the middle of it is this
web server
platform.
That's right. I like to point out some of these pictures where you have this, I'm going to scoot around
sure.
and kind of show you because it's kind of fun. So my this is what I looked like about 3 months ago, according to my 5-year-old son. Actually, he was 5 then. And I'd like to note that I've progressed in evolution.
Nice.
I've gone from a pod person, this is Nikki and this is Mommy, I've gone from a pod person to this person.
All right.
So who knows, you guys could come back in 3 months to 6 months, and I could be something entirely different.
Very
Maybe
cool.
we'll just do that.
Yeah.
Well, wow. Carmine, any last thoughts?
Any last craziness? Well, we haven't asked, like, you know, the typical question we always ask.
You ask it.
Which the random kind of question.
It's your question to ask.
So, you know, this is Women in Technology, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the point of the show, is to showcase women that work at Microsoft in the technical field. Mm-hmm. Clearly, there's a great gender mismatch. There's more men than there are women in this mm-hmm. industry. So we like to ask the women that we interview why they think that's probably is the case. So it's sort of a theoretical question.
Mm-hmm. I always look at it in terms of bands, like level bands, right? So I do a bit of mentoring in the company, and I work with a lot of women at the, you know, the main program manager band as opposed to the manager ones, mm-hmm. right? And I kind of look at numbers and drop-off rates. I think of it as drop-off rates in those areas. And I do think there is a pretty large drop-off rate that occurs when people have kids. I think that's a big drop-off rate, because if I think about my peers, and I think about the women that I work with, I know that a lot of them go out of the workforce for at least a few years when they start having kids, because it's really hard to do the two working parent thing. You get the multiple kids, and you throw in the commute, and, you know, it gets a little crazy. So what I try to think about is just basically support networks for that. And then also identifying the right groups that can help great employees who are going through what Bob Mu has called life stages, mm-hmm. where they might need more support in some area or another. I went through that. I mean, I remember the 6 months after each kid was born, they've all been terrible sleepers. Every last one of them has been terrible sleepers in the first 6 months after I came back from maternity leave. It was really hard to think because, you know, I'd get 2-hour stretches of sleep for the entire night for six months. So, you know, in that kind of environment, you kind of have to have a manager who can help. Like, if you just say, look, I got to go home early, just go to sleep, right? And they can accommodate that and they can work with it. So I think that for the band of folks where I think the drop-off really occurs, the thing that I try to emphasize when I work with other women is just making sure that they understand what their needs and their self-care needs are going to be, and being really vocal about what they need. Right? Don't be apologetic about it. It is what it is, right? If you're giving back to the company should flex to accommodate where you are in your particular life stage. I really believe that. If your group can't do it, there are other groups at Microsoft that can. Period. End of story. I know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. Right? So I really look at that as being a major driver for drop-off, and I also look at it being something that can be addressed. If you are assertive as the working mom, and also if you're very open about, you know, going after what you want and not taking no for an answer there. You don't have to leave the company. Mm-hmm. You can go to another group where people just look at what you do and say, yep, you do a good job. You might have a couple of, you know, changes to your schedule that you have to do to accommodate that, but you do a good job. So I think that's one thing. And then on the on the women sort of senior manager track, I think the number one impact has just been having a great cohort or having a great sort of network of senior women who you know you could just pick up the phone and say, look, I'm having just the worst day, right? And I really need to go talk to you about this. And they'll go out to coffee with you. And you'll just unload, and they'll relate back where they were, and you'll get a lot of support that way. Mm-hmm. So I think that cohort, that network of similarly leveled women, mm-hmm. and then plus one or two above you, has been enormously valuable in retaining and helping progress women through the stage that I'm in right now.
Cool. So it sounds like it's a pretty supportive environment here in the Death Star of Microsoft.
The Death Star. You know, I mean, Microsoft's
That's
a
great.
Huge company. It's a huge mm-hmm. company. And Microsoft as a company is comprised of a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, it's all about where you are mm-hmm. and what your larger sort of circles are around you and who are the people in those circles that support you. And, the number one thing that I tell people is that you are in control of that.
Right.
But you are absolutely in control of that.
I like the point you made about being assertive. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like you can necessarily sit back and just have it given to you. You have to ask for what you want and need.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, there can be a compromise where you meet in the middle.
That's right. I mean, people can say no, too,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't ask, how are you going to know?
Right.
If they don't say no, then you're going to have an assumption. Again, going back to that question, every assumption, they're going to have an assumption about what you need. You're going to have an assumption about what you're thinking. And you're just going to keep on trundling down that path unless you just open it up and say, this is what I need.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you need. If the business can accommodate it, let's go make it happen. If your business can accommodate it, your culture can accommodate it, I'm going to go find a culture that does. And there are enough of those cultures at Microsoft where you can make it happen. I mean,
it's growing.
I mean, it's grown.
Yeah, I think that there are more and more groups and divisions mm-hmm. are really accommodating the work flexible work schedule and
mm-hmm.
understanding that people are, you know, adults and that we have, even if you don't have kids,
yeah.
sometimes you might need a flexible work schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But as long as you deliver, yes, Carmine,
yeah.
that's all that matters. You know,
it's not
about punching the clock. That's what, one of the reasons why I love Microsoft.
Absolutely. It's an intellectual place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about nuts and bolts.
No, it's very energizing, too.
Yeah.
I think that's very energizing, is the fact that you can have all those different things in one environment. I love it.
Great. And this has been brought to you by
another
HR.
Testimony.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for coming, guys.
Oh, it's
nice
been great
to meet you.
Bye-bye.
Very cool.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye-bye.